Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Berlindy, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that is John Rauhaus playing in the background. As you hopefully know, the Fretboard Journal 44 is out now. Mandolin Orange is on the cover of that one. We also have features with M. Ward, Benson Amplifiers, the guitars of Johnny Winter, as well as the resurrection of Speedy West's Bigsby guitar, and a lot more. You can get that at fretboardjournal.com, or you can subscribe and start with that issue. And we also, as you hopefully know, now are offering PDF digital versions of the Fretboard Journal for folks who want all the meaty content but don't want all the clutter. We have something new starting with this very podcast that I am very, very excited to tell you about. We have presenting sponsors. We are a scrappy little indie media company. We are largely reader supported, but we also depend on the support of some of the bigger brands in the musical instrument industry to help make this amazing magazine and all these podcasts happen. And we have three presenting sponsors going forward, and these are people and brands who like what we are doing so much, they've decided to put their name and their logo behind everything we do. Not only this podcast, but the new Skip Simmons podcast and the Luthier on Luthier podcast, all of our videos, all of our online content, as well as all of our print magazines. And I am so excited to have these three presenting sponsors because I love all these brands. First up is Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage is where guitar lovers go for a good time. You probably know about Walter and Christy Carter. They're down in Nashville, Tennessee. We have Gibson Guitars. Only a Gibson is good enough. Also based in Nashville, Tennessee. And last but not least, we have Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. These are three brands that I am proud to say are supporting the Fretboard Journal, and I am so excited to be sharing their story, not only on the podcast, but in the magazine with you guys going forward. On this week's podcast, we are talking to two individuals from Martin Guitars that I cannot say enough about. I actually just got to visit Martin last month and had a great tour of their facilities and got to go to the North Street factory. And while I was there, I had this interview with Fred Green, VP of Martin Guitars, and Tim Teal, Director of Instrument Design for Martin. This was one of the most refreshingly candid talks I've had with anyone in the industry. Both of these guys were so brutally honest. We talked about how a company steeped in tradition decides to make new models, some of the effects of those new models, some of the aftermath, whether their heart is in some of the new models. Like we covered a lot of ground in this hour, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. I truly enjoyed it, and if you ever get a chance to hang out in Nazareth and visit the Martin factory, Fred Green, you have pretty much the coolest office I've seen anywhere. It's sort of smack dab in the middle of this giant guitar-making facility, and it's in this little bunker, and he's got Marshall stacks and Strymon pedals and all of this crazy stuff that is very un-Martin, but is so cool. It's so cool to see the VP of a company like Martin so into music and music of all sorts. So I had a great visit with these guys. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Not much else to report here. We have a ton of great new videos and content on fretboardjournal.com, so check all of that out if you haven't yet. We are up to 14 episodes of our new podcast on tube amps, The Truth About Vintage Amps with Skip Simmons. I'm having a blast hosting that. If you haven't checked it out yet, I feel bad for you because you're going to have to wade through 14 episodes. But for those of you who have checked it out, or those of you who are about to, maybe you have some long drives ahead of you this summer, thank you so much for checking it out. Thank you for supporting it. It is one of the quirkier and more niche things I've ever done, but the reaction to it has been as big as anything we've ever done. We get letters every day about that podcast, and it's all due to Skip being so open and honest with all of his amp know-how. So check that out. It's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher, it's on Spotify, and all the usual places. All right, here is my talk from Nazareth, Pennsylvania, with Fred Green and Tim Teal from Martin Guitars. Again, we're going to be showcasing a few of the new presenting sponsors over the next few weeks, but these are not going to be fluffy interviews. These are going to be actual meaty Fretboard Journal style interviews because these are three brands that can take it. So thanks so much. Here's the interview. So for folks tuning in, introduce yourselves and kind of tell us what your titles are.
Sure. My name is Fred Green. I'm the Vice President of Product at Martin Guitar.
I'm Tim Teal. I do instrument design for Martin Guitar.
Okay. So all sorts of stuff. I'm still processing the Epic tour we just got.
Oh,
that
cool.
Went on for, I don't know, hours. And I mean, I think everybody, when they first come to this facility, is just in awe of how many people are here,
right.
How all the wood, all the guitars, all the machinery. I guess my question is, you know, with a brand as steeped in tradition as Martin, how do you guys decide what the new stuff is? What's that thought process like?
That's a great question.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's a tough way to start, but yeah.
All right. So I'll take it, Tim, first.
Go ahead.
I'll start off. It's trying to keep a real balance between the basic business stuff that you would expect, which is certain product lines are selling better than other product lines.
Yeah.
You're looking at the competition, you're kind of seeing what they're doing, what other people are having success with, and trying to figure out how can we grow this business. Where are the opportunities for us to grow the business? So you have that devil on your shoulder talking to you.
Sure.
And then you have the angel on your shoulder, on the other shoulder, which is all the cool stuff you just want to do because you like guitars.
Yeah.
Because it's a really cool thing and you're excited about it. And maybe it doesn't make as much financial sense to do, but it becomes like sort of a passion play. So you're trying to sort of find a way to mix those two items together and, of course, then sell that idea to the organization. Because as much tradition as we have at Martin, people are sort of clinging to not changing things too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're always conscious of not screwing it up.
Sure.
Well, there is a fine line there.
Right. There's a real fine line. And Tim has to deal with a lot on the design side because he and I are sort of working through those. I guess a good example is maybe we'll come and I'll say, hey, Tim, I've got an idea, a concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would you do? How can we do this? Or how can we make something better? What materials have you been working with? What vendor has some kind of a new piece that we can incorporate or find some way?
Mm-hmm.
And then we just sort of start pitching these things back and forth.
The Modern Deluxe is a great example of a recent
endeavor. What that was.
What was the process like there? What was the original kernel of an idea there?
Okay, so this is one where the devil is speaking to us to begin with.
Okay.
Which is the prior year we had redone the standard line.
Yeah.
And it was killing. I mean, we had tremendous success with that. It really exceeded our expectations.
Yeah.
And the vintage line, which is just above it, was really suffering.
Okay.
So when I'm looking at the numbers, it's old. We haven't touched it in a long time. So when I'm looking at numbers, trying to see what's moving, what's not moving, what consumers are responding to, the vintage line had been on a 5-year slide.
Okay.
And I think part of that was two things. The authentic line has been super successful.
Mm-hmm.
So the really vintage guys naturally went for the full-on authentic, and we just upgraded the standard line, and that's starting to eat in. So this became the vintage line became like the middle child.
Yeah.
So our thought process was, listen, how can we keep this alive? I don't want to lose that revenue.
Yeah.
Right. From a business standpoint, but how can we build something that guitar players will be excited about? Well, I mean, we already make a super vintagey piece in authentics.
Yep.
And we make a more accessible piece in this standard line. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of I won't say lesser version, but not the full-on vintage part of it.
Yeah.
So what can we do in between that's going to get people excited?
Yeah.
And so we'd been playing with all these new materials through the custom shop, and that was sort of became our test mule for a lot of these, which would be
show specials.
Show specials. Tim would build something, and it would have a titanium truss rod.
Yeah.
And then next year he would build something with a carbon fiber bridge plate, or we'd been playing with liquid metal.
Yeah,
for bridge pins and things like that. And I said, maybe that's the idea, is that we build something that's sort of a modern acoustic guitar on the inside, but when you saw it from the outside, there was nothing that turned you off about it.
Sure.
It made you too freaked out. It still screamed Martin guitar, so you didn't chase away those consumers at that price point, because
mm-hmm.
it's not a cheap guitar
by
any standard. So then we just started building some protos and saying, all right, will this work? Will there be a sonic difference in this guitar? Will people respond to it in a positive way? And then
it's like the recipe worked.
Yeah.
And in a not really surprising way, because we, like Fred said, we have been experimenting with these newer materials for a long time. And it's almost like a food company. They're looking for that bliss point mm-hmm. in a recipe that they get people hooked on the food.
Yeah.
We're trying to get people hooked on our tone.
Sure.
You know, so we want that bliss point in a tonal way. And I think we found it with the Modern Deluxe, because
yeah.
it's everything you want and then some, but not it's not overdone.
Yeah, it didn't scare anybody off.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know when you put it in the hands. We had to test it and make sure we were getting something out of each component, or there's no reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew we had lightweight with a titanium rod. We knew the bridge plate, the carbon fiber bridge plate, which sandwiched with carbon fiber and a piece of torrified maple.
Mm-hmm. Spruce.
Spruce on the inside of that. And then we had the liquid metal pin. So we test each one of those individually and make sure we were getting some sonic difference there. And we had to put it all together. And then we says, all right, it still needs to look a little bit different, but not too different.
Mm-hmm.
So then we says, all right, it's modern, so let's go with wood binding instead of just, you know, an ivory color plastic on the outside or something like that.
And that was a challenge for manufacturing.
The manufacturing people, then you have to negotiate with all of them out on the floor. And I ran manufacturing for 13 years before doing this part of the gig here. And so when you're doing design, people, when you read forum pages online, you get all kinds of, everybody makes it to, why don't they just do this?
Are you
this?
Reading the forums?
Why don't they just do that? Well, let me put it, I look.
All right.
I do. I have to admit.
Okay.
I look. You shouldn't read your own reviews in some cases, but nobody knows who I am, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
But I do look, and I like to see what people are responding to.
Yeah.
And it's always, why doesn't Martin just make a D28 and leave everything alone?
Sure.
Well, that'd be great, but once you've got a D28, then what are you supposed to do after that?
Yeah.
They last for a very long time.
They do. They last too long, frankly. But now you want to challenge people. And we had this real philosophy. Tim and I had a lot of discussions about this, which is, if CF the First were alive, he would use the best materials right. available.
Yeah.
He wouldn't cling to the materials that were used when he was in Germany only.
Yeah.
He wouldn't only use the tools that he used then. He was looking for the best of what he could find. So that's sort of how we approach this. What is the best material we could find for a truss rod?
Yeah.
Titanium is better than steel.
Right.
It was light and stronger.
Yeah.
You know, and then we tried to look at each component of the instrument and just put the best of what we had from a modern standpoint on the guitar, but stay true to the soul or the core right. of what it is.
Yeah.
And Tim and Ramin, who's another designer who works for us, Skip Belts, who's the product manager, and a whole team of people in production, really everybody sort of chipped in and did a pretty awesome job putting it together for us. So we were really happy with it, and it's working right now. So
when you guys do this, like, prototyping, is there a spectrum? Was there a guitar that was like went too far and you're like, oh, that has one thing that's too wild?
Sure. Really? I mean, you know, when we a good example.
You're smiling. You must know something, Fred.
Well, the one that comes to mind first is when we got into torfying.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have developed our own VTS, which was vintage tone system. But, you know, people were doing torfying for a while. We got into it in a testing phase. And, of course, you always think more is better, right? And, you know, very early on, I discovered that there is a limit to torfying, because it can become too brittle.
Sure.
And so when we first started it, we actually had two levels of roasting. And, you know, we ended up choosing to go with this level one, which basically replicates a time period. So we were able to look at guitars between 1900 and 1940 and kind of figure out what had happened to the wood over that amount of time.
Yeah.
And then pick a recipe in the torfying process to closely match that.
All right.
And that seems to work the best, because it's not overdone.
Sure.
When you get into the other roasting level we had, that was like a 200 or 300 year old process, and it was just too much.
Yeah. Tim. Yeah. Tim doesn't want to tell you about all the screw ups on these
things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you overdo the VTS, sometimes the wood becomes what they call hydrophobic, In other words, it won't absorb any moistures.
Okay.
Right, which can be a positive, but it's really bad when you're trying to glue things to it.
Yeah,
oh, sure.
So exactly. Nothing sticks.
Yeah.
That becomes another problem. All the bridges want to pop off. We've That's made true. Some really stupid guitars.
Yeah.
I mean, like prototype stuff, just testing.
Well, I talked to Kenneth Pattingale, so I heard about it. I heard about his. I want to see that thing in person.
Yeah. Yeah. Which Kenneth's one? Fun.
Okay, yeah.
The one with the tilt. Yeah. Grain at the tilt.
Yeah. Kenneth was fun to work with, man. He wanted, we've done some crazy stuff. And when it comes to artists like Kenneth, you know, you just go with their instincts.
Yeah.
Don't, they're creatives, man. You let them run. If we can put it together, we'll do it. Our saying around here is we never say no, we just say how much.
Yeah.
what are some of the things that you're hearing from dealers on, like, what are the guitars on the horizon? What are things that people keep asking about that maybe you'll tackle?
See, the big thing right now is everybody, it's all about acoustic electric.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because of the Fender thing, or no?
Well, it was before that.
Yeah. I mean,
Fender's reaction to, they're reacting to the same feedback that everybody is.
Huh.
And I think part of that is all guitar companies are sort of facing the same demographic, which is an aging populace for guitars. And everybody wants to attract, you hear this from every new CEO.
Of course.
Which is, we need more young people, and we need more women.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of truth in that. And all companies need that. And what we're trying to do is find a way to attract younger folks. And everybody wants to hook everything up to the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has to hook up to the computer. And that's a real challenge for us in a very organic business like acoustic guitars.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's trying to figure out a way to... Nobody... If you're a young person, you don't want your dad's guitar.
Yep.
All right. In a kind of a weird way, you sort of... You later come to it and you aspire to it. You don't want your dad's Mercedes, but you kind of wouldn't mind owning a Mercedes, even though you're young. You kind of want a younger version of it.
Sure.
So the AE piece of it, the acoustic electric piece of it, seems to be driving the business to find a way to get young folks to want to try it,
mm-hmm.
Well, to experience a product in a different way.
And plus, every young folk is
connectivity.
Used to, you know, phones and everything. So when they have that choice, even if they don't use it,
yeah.
They usually opt to pay a couple bucks more to get something with electronics in case I need it someday, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. So think about how much it's going to change. It presents a specific challenge for us as a traditionalist in the acoustic space.
Yeah. All get right? that Bluetooth connectivity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not something people are really jiving with, our traditional consumers. So how do you balance it? How do you attract a new consumer without alienating your current consumer? That's a real struggle. I mean, Tim and I for us, the way we talk about it is there's not going to be any revolution. It's going to be an evolution. It's going to be more of a slow move for us. We probably won't be the tip of the spear on some of this stuff. But the electronics and guitars are going to really start to change. I mean, think about it. We're still using 9-volt batteries.
Right.
I mean, really?
Everything's rechargeable.
Yeah.
Everything's rechargeable today. Everything,
People are going to want to use proximity chargers on their guitars. Yeah. They're going to want to be able to connect it. I mean, you look at cables and cords. Does anybody think that a quarter-inch jack is the future?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So the guitars are going to have to adapt to the way people experience things. I mean, the idea of my daughter, who's 19 years old, when I show her a quarter-inch jack and a cable, she looks at me like a caveman. Because she doesn't have any cables in her room on anything.
Yeah.
Everything is wireless.
Yeah.
You know, she's typing on her computer in her room and printing it downstairs. You know, there's no wires. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
And so trying to figure out how we're going to adapt to that and how we're going to get vendors to adapt to it and move, because the industry clings so tightly to tradition. The people who are currently in charge are of a different age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a real struggle. So I commend Fender on trying to, you know, do something a little different, to trying to get into a different space.
Yeah.
They want to grow their business.
Yeah.
I expect a lot of the other big companies who have the resources and the engineering to do those kinds of things to probably lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't be far off that mark. So we're working on stuff along those lines for the future, but we're not giving up. We're not going to give up on the traditional consumer either. So I think you're going to see changes to the Authentic line.
Yeah.
In the future.
Making it more authentic.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
More, and maybe trying to broaden the appeal in a way. And it's without giving away too much there.
Yeah.
But changes to that. And at the same time, there'll be more aging that's going on like we're doing now.
Yeah.
Because there is a market for that. And that's continuing. And I mean, I loved watching that battle online when we first did an aged authentic.
Yeah.
You know, it's like cheating. I prefer to age mine my own. And then they play one and it goes,
we've had those discussions internally too for a long time.
Yeah. So having all that controversy is good. We always talk about guitars in a way that the best guitars are guitars that people love or hate. Those are always the best guitars.
Absolutely.
A guitar that's sort of like everybody kind of goes, eh.
Yeah.
It does everything pretty well. Those are the worst guitars. Those are the most forgettable pieces you'll ever see. I mean, if you got a guy who loves a Les Paul, he probably hates a Telecaster.
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with a Telecaster, but as a guy who loves a Tele, he probably hates the Les Paul.
Yeah.
So that's what makes them great guitars. They're passionate about something on the instrument. And guitars where you're just sort of like, yeah, I can't really say there's anything wrong with it. I'm not in love with it, but boof. Another worst.
Tim, is there like a, you know, NAMM is obviously the big chapter marker of, you know, the guitar season, for lack of a better word.
Sure.
Is there a directive to like, hey, we're going to need X number of new models?
Oh,
and, and if there is, I'm curious, do you divide those between like, these are going to be really, really traditional? You know, is it like 50-50? Do you try to like balance it?
Back in the day, I've been doing this part of the job for a very long time. It's probably close to 20 years.
Okay.
And, you know, when we started off coming up and developing new products, there was a lot of ideas. And you took some of them, most of them, and developed them into product. In the last few years, we've become a lot more focused on product lines and making sure that we have a clean introduction instead of having a shotgun approach.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about it with, you know, our product manager, Skip, Fred, of course, and develop a strategy around it. Of course, there's a corporate strategy that kind of sets the roadmap for us, and then we'll play to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like we said earlier, we do walk a fine line because we are known for our tradition,
mm-hmm.
our tone, and yet we have to be modern in some sense too. So we had some really killer product come out recently. We're working on some very new and exciting product that we can't get into at the moment.
Sure.
But, you know, stay tuned for that.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, everything you've been doing, especially of late, has been amazing. Do you ever just also feel like, you know, I look at like a D18 standard as just like such a like you're nailing it.
Right.
And it's such a versatile Swiss Army. Do you ever just be like, come on, people, just try this fucking thing out. Like, you know, I mean, do you ever go through that? So you're not having to come up with all this new stuff?
Or? Well, that's exactly it.
And it's interesting too, because, you know, we just did the Reimagine last year.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends in the guitar world, you know, and it's still amazing to me. People are just learning about the Reimagined stuff now, and it's been over a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, Modern Deluxe is the new thing that just came out.
Yep.
And we think everybody's heard about that. No.
No.
No. People are just starting to, you know, the antennas are going up. Ooh, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, 15 years into this, people are still finding the Fretboard Journal for the first time.
Yeah, so exactly.
It happens.
Exactly. I believe you. Yeah. Especially with the lower price point guitars, you know, the stuff that's coming out of Mexico.
Yeah.
That's when we feel like you have to beg people to sort of try these guitars.
Oh, I can imagine.
Says, I wish you guys made a more affordable guitar. Says, oh, we do. We make some guitars out of Mexico, and you should try them out. So if you go to our Mexico factory, it looks just like one here.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that's cool. I says, you know, these are probably all made out of veneer or something. No, they're solid wood guitars. Wait a minute, it's a solid wood guitar, a Martin guitar at this price point? You go, yeah, it's only been around for like 8 years. Where have you been?
Right.
Yeah.
And so we're constantly getting, you know, maybe you need to come up with something new in this price point because I don't know what I can do that's a whole lot better than that.
Yeah.
We have a conversation, you know, why is anybody buying a Dreadnought guitar that's not a Martin guitar? It's kind of, you know, we invented it.
Yeah.
We invented that guitar. I mean, what are you looking for that we're not making there?
Yeah.
We offer just about everything.
And in most
I'm price pretty points, confident yeah. there's not much at our price points that's right. going to sound any better than what we make.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, it's I guess it's sort of like, I'm sure the guys at Levi's say, why would anybody buy blue jeans other than Levi's?
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's just a matter of personal taste or whatever. Yeah. I try to take it personal, but I do. I can't help it.
What's ego, the last non-Martin guitar you guys both bought, or each bought?
I shouldn't say that. I do own a Paul Reed Smith Electric.
Yeah. All right.
But that's it. But, you know, I only have Martins.
Yeah, I bought a Tele from Wildwood Music in Colorado.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I
can't. But we don't make electric guitars. So,
no, yeah. But that's my old electric guitar life from my prior employer. I used to work at Gibson. So I have my SG in the office, and I have a Tele in the office, and a Strat. In the office, why not? Got to have it all in there, and amps, and it's all full of pedals all over the floor. And then I got acoustic guitars, and every junker proto that Tim makes, he somehow finds a way to leave it in my office, strewn about the floor.
It's a good spot.
We can't even walk around in there. And somebody's drum sets in my office, and it's a mess in there right now. But it's not the worst place in the world.
Do you guys? We talked about new stuff. Do you guys still walk into Walter and Christy Carter's or Gruen's and inspired by
Oh, man.
Even our own museum, we have a lot of great product.
We do that all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best thing is when you go in, you see some old guitar and you see some old Larson Brothers guitar and you go, oh, holy moly, man, this is a good guitar.
Yeah.
This is really good. I like the way they did this or this little inlay pattern they used, or can we play with that? Can we sort of riff off of this little thing they did? And then sure enough, once you start digging into it, you find out how expensive it is to do or how labor-intensive it is. And you go, oof. I mean, I know we love it, but I'm not so sure anybody's willing to pay that much for it. It means a lot to us. But
remember that George Bauer-inspired guitar we did that had like a carved heel on it?
Right.
So
now we have the 5-axis CNC. It was our first carved heel off the 5-axis.
Yeah.
It was a cool little guitar. You know?
Yeah. It's weird. Sometimes those old guitar elements, because they're so labor intensive, and it's just a, you know, when they were probably originally made, there was just one skilled artisan who was able to do it. So obviously that's not practical in today's world. So lots of times that leads us to discover new technologies or machinery to do these processes that we would never thought. To Tim's point, a CNC machine that works on all 5 axes to go around, that was because we wanted to do a carved heel. And we just couldn't have some guy sitting around all day and pay somebody a ton of money, you know, to sit there and chisel out heels all day long. And they would have been disabled probably by the third day.
It would have looked cool in the lobby.
It would have looked cool in the lobby. Yeah. And it's that's another piece of it. The technology then starts to push us to do design things that we maybe weren't practical to do years ago.
We take inspiration from other things. You know, we're into different interest levels, you know, the watch business. So you know,
cars,
D200,
Who's the watch guy? Who was the brains of that?
That was kind of all of us, really.
We all like watches. Tim
Roland Murphy,
right?
He actually took the tour and called and landed on my phone and said, hey, I'd love to work with you guys someday. About 3 years later, the right timing happened, and, you know, no pun intended, but called the watch guy and said, hey, you know, we got this project. Are you interested? Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know,
right. Yeah. Well, I was looking online one day at the picture of a new Audi and the interior, and it had this really cool silver trim and this little orange outline around the numbers, and it had wood on the inside. So I went to Tim and I said, man, we got to make a guitar that kind of looks like this. This picture looks awesome. He goes, wow, it does look really good. So we went out and we found some silver binding and we did all kinds of things. And we put together a little 16 series guitar using that. And it was all just because we saw a picture of an Audi online, basically. So sometimes it's fun to do those little tricks. But then once again, I'm back on the forum page and some guy, what's wrong with Martin silver binding?
Oh,
those guys have lost their mind. Why don't they just stick to the D28? So there's just like this gravitational pull. It just sort of pulls you into 1935 over and over.
You try to push it forward a little bit.
Have you ever gotten a good idea from the forum, though? That ended up working. Is there any constructive criticism?
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's I would be really, I'd be lying if I said that. I like to watch and see what people are reacting to many times with other people's brands.
Okay.
Things like nut widths and little dimensional issues in many cases seem to get a life unto themselves and get very popular in a certain period. So if we're working on a new guitar and I'm hearing a lot of people talking about, I want a 1 3/4 nut. Everybody was sort of vibing on that. Mm-hmm. So that maybe might push our choice in that direction.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of how we stumbled onto the high performance taper.
Yeah.
So 1 3/4 nut, but the taper is narrow. So you still have 2 1/8 at the 12th fret. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds for most people.
Yeah.
And, at first people were freaked out. Oh, I don't like 1 3/4 too wide. But until they play it and they actually feel the whole neck, it's like, oh, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But it does tend to go in these sort of weird waves of
trends
and opinions. It goes from one thing to the other. We saw it a lot on strings, because we get to work on strings also.
Oh, yeah.
And, people will start complaining about a certain feel or type or a look of a string. And
then everyone's got the same
Then everybody's complaint. Got the same opinion all of a sudden. And all of a sudden, everybody online, it seems like everybody online is playing some weird esoteric string brand that you've never heard of before.
Sure.
And you're like, you'll look it up and you're like, these guys can't be selling more than 1,000 sets of strings. How can everybody on the forum page be playing this set of strings? It doesn't make any sense to me. And then you start to, you have to read between the lines that, people all want to, the whole point of a forum is to find a group of people you can fit in with.
Yeah.
So sort of in a weird way, the last thing you want to do is be an outlier within that group.
Sure.
There's always one or two, but there's what you find on those groups is they are tastemakers.
Yeah.
Within that. And there are people in there who frankly know more about Martin guitars than we do.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. They'll call up and say, hey, I think your spec's wrong. Can you double check it? And sure enough. Yeah. Oh yeah. We missed that. Thanks.
Yeah. And so, they're way into it.
Yeah.
And, but I think they're into it on a passion point and maybe they're supposed to be into it for that reason. For us, it's a living and it's a business and you're feeding people with the decisions you're making. So there's a lot at stake. You're not just trying to satisfy one guy who plays guitar on the weekend or whatever. So you have to make these decisions and the guys on the forums, maybe in some cases don't take into consideration that I have to sell these same guitars in Japan. In Germany, in Italy, in South America. So it
and their granddaughters.
So that's why I can't just make bluegrass guitars.
I love the guys who say, hey, you make too many guitars. You got to have just a small amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next sentence is, and by the way, you're missing, and they list 10 more models that you need.
That's the other battle we fight all the time. We've got too many models.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to tell you what we should be making. So even with too many models, we're still not making enough.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
They always say you got too many models, but they never tell you which ones to get rid of.
Of course.
Because as soon as you get rid of one, somebody's crying, knocking on the door, saying, I can't believe you got rid of that. It's the greatest guitar you guys ever made. So it's just kind of crazy. I mean, you guys get out to a lot of factories, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, do you hear the same?
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think everyone.
I think it's universal, right?
I think this industry in general is trying to figure out, what that fine line is where you appeal to your hardcore fans who are aging.
Yeah, right.
And then you still hopefully find a way to grow,
Right.
I don't know what that is. I don't think anybody does,
No, I don't either. I mean, it seems like there's definitely a difference between the acoustic side and the electric side, having been on both ends.
Yeah.
Especially now since the two major electric companies, Gibson and Fender, are private equity owned.
Yeah.
And the two major acoustic players, which is Taylor and Martin, are still privately owned and privately owned by namesakes.
Mm-hmm.
So their approaches to the business are really, really different.
Yeah.
I remember when it was at Gibson, it was like full on Hatfield and McCoys with Fender. You don't cross the line. You don't talk to each other. You don't share anything. There's not a lot of love loss in that sense. It wasn't personal, but just from a branding standpoint. And the acoustic side, when it came to Martin, it was
very different. Yeah,
absolute opposite.
Yeah,
like you go hang out with Bob.
Yeah,
walk around the factory, talk to Andy, see what's going on at Taylor.
Yeah.
Bob comes here when he wants to talk to us about Ebony or something like that, and he kind of flies in and comes and hangs out in the factory, and Chris and Bob go have dinner together. You know, Bob called me a few months ago and says, hey, we're having problems with our decal vendor. Can you tell me who you guys use for decals? I'm like, sure, I'll find out. And it's more collegial. It's more,
yeah.
You know, you're competing. It's weird. It's sort of like competing, like when golfers competing. You're trying to beat the brains out of the other guy, and it's over. You like take your hat off and shake hands and go have a drink.
Yeah,
it sort of feels like that. The old cartoon with the dog and the wolf. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
You ring the bell at the end of the day.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels more like that. The electric side did not feel like that at all.
That's interesting.
And that may have been more of the personalities in charge.
Yeah. But well, yeah.
No, it's really
different. I mean, when Bill Collings passed away, like his memorial had everyone from.
Oh, yeah.
Every major guitar, you know, Richard Hoover and every major company had someone there, which was a testament to how tight-knit everything is.
Exactly. I think there may be, like, stickers or a hat sitting right outside the door here with Bill's face on it.
Yeah.
Chris was doing some charity work for them since his passing.
Yeah.
And I talked to Steve at Collings all the time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Going back to what you guys are fabricating, you know, you talked about the neck. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. I've just been in awe, spent 6 hours looking at all these amazing machineries, all this efficiency, Plek machines, all this stuff. Does those, when you think of a neck like that, 1 3/4 nut, I want it to taper a certain way, is it getting back to basics? Is it a guy carving that out by hand, or do you program it? What's your process like?
We'll do an oversized prototype.
Okay.
We'll carve it down. We just went through this about a year ago. We were playing with some different barrel shapes. And that'll be for a future product. But, yeah, we hand-shaped them into what we thought we would like.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a few. Ramin did a few. We actually had them tested, you know. So we did internal and external people.
Okay.
We had a pretty big, you know, testing. Hey, what neck do you like better, A, B, or C? And turns out, you know, certain one won against even, like, a standard neck shape.
Okay.
So we decided, okay, we're going to go in this direction. And yeah. And then it goes up to CAD, and then CAD guys do a 3D model of it. And then, of course, it gets machined into something that is more production friendly.
Yeah. And when it's something like the carbon fiber in the bridge with the, like, obviously it works.
Right.
Is the inclination then like, let's put a little bit more carbon fiber and see what this next model could look like?
I have a lot of experience with alternative materials.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Like Fred said, we did a lot of crazy things because we didn't know. So we had a try.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, at this point, after 20 years, I have a pretty good idea just of how much carbon fiber works versus other material.
Okay.
So there is kind of a recipe for it.
Okay.
And I think there's some other things in the future that'll be great, you know. Not great like, you know, race car great, but on the acoustic side, I think there's more to mine there with carbon fiber.
Yeah. You got to be so conscious of that Martin sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That if you get too far removed from there,
mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure some of our consumers are gonna walk with us.
Yeah, I go back to that tonal bliss point. There is that thing that you're familiar with. It's like sugar. Sugar's great. It tastes great, but too much of it, it's like, you know, there's a balance. Mm-hmm. So everything you do in the guitar recipe needs to have a balance. Yeah, it can taste different than this, it can sound different than that, but it's still, they're two great pieces, and they're dedicated for different styles.
And you can't ever underestimate's the wrong word. Take for granted you need commercial success, because of all these new materials, people don't think about the tooling cost and the investment that Chris has to make on the business side of it. So these investments need to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
So everything can't be just like, you can't come in and treat the business like a like Santa's workshop, where you get to do all your stuff that you're in love with and you're the happiest guy in the world and nobody else is buying them.
Yeah.
You really have to get outside of yourself and pick your battles and decide which hills you want to die on in terms of what projects you want to fight for, mm-hmm. and how much you believe in something. And just like any other business, you're putting your neck out there. When you say this is the direction we're going to go, if it doesn't perform and you have, you know, too many strikeouts in a row, mm-hmm. hey, there's another guy who would love to be in charge of designing product for Martin Guitar.
Sure.
There's no shortage of people who want that job. So that's you right. have to perform.
Yeah.
Not only for yourself and your own family, but all these people out in the floor that you saw today, they're all depending on us
yeah.
to put together stuff that's going to keep the business running for another 180 plus years. Mm-hmm. So you can't be stupid or willy-nilly about the decisions you're making. Say, hey, I got this great idea. We're going to make an all-aluminum guitar, and it's going to have all this cool carbon fiber and a leather back on it and all this crazy crap.
Yeah.
And then everybody just
rejects it.
You sell
three.
You sell three of them, exactly, and the production people are sitting there with, you know, 10 years worth of aluminum stacked up out back.
Right.
You don't even know where to go. Yeah, people don't think about that too much.
You're right.
You see that with wood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other big pressure piece that, from a design standpoint, that's really become an issue, is finding woods that you can ship.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the whole CITES latest stuff. Where are things at in your guys' head, and what's on the horizon there?
It's a moving target.
Yeah. Ever-changing. Yeah. It's like trying to predict a tornado.
Yeah.
Once again, being the traditionalist in the marketplace, it's particularly tough for us.
Yeah.
Because we're so rosewood-centric.
Yeah.
And so when you start having to talk people into something other than rosewood,
yeah,
they want to just suck you back to 1937. They just don't want any part of it. You know, hey, maybe you should try out some of the sycamore. It sounds really good. It sounds a lot like mahogany and a mix of this and that. And he goes, that looks great. Yeah. Can you make it browner?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you make it more look like rosewood? Yeah. Sure, we can make it look more like rosewood. Great. Can you just make it rosewood?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the process.
Jesus, here we are again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not easy trying to drag people into new stuff. That's why we're just sort of doing it piece by piece.
Mm-hmm.
Get you used to it. Get a few pieces out there. Not everything has to be a home run. We're okay hitting singles from time to time.
Which of the newer wave of woods do you wish people would try out?
I think sycamore is a great wood. Yeah. We build a D18 sycamore, and a lot of the UMGF folks came in and tried it and loved it.
Yeah.
You know, and so we knew from a dreadnought size perspective it was really good, and that's why we chose it for the D16E with the silver binding, sycamore. Worked out really well, and that's cool too because it's a triple load depth, so very comfortable. But that's a great wood. Cherry, Pennsylvania has some of the best cherry in the world.
It's not brown enough.
But it's cherry, and people don't think of it as a tone wood, but it makes a great tone wood.
Yeah.
We did some good walnut guitars.
Walnut
was fun.
Yeah.
And on the exotic end, you know, like Zeracote.
Yeah.
There's no CITES right now.
Yeah.
That's the other issue.
Grenadillo
is another one we've been doing good with. Yeah. Yeah. The issue for us that we're running into, being one of the bigger players in the market, is you find a wood where there's no pressure on it and there's no CITES. And as soon as we start putting it on guitars, we start harvesting it in a pretty good. And then everybody says, Martin's doing it. Let's get on. And before you know it, every guitar company is sort of copying what you're doing, and all of a sudden that piece of wood is under tremendous pressure, and the next thing you know, it starts to appear. And then now you can't get it.
Yeah.
And then the price starts to skyrocket like crazy. So we're really trying to focus on, you know, American or domestic hardwoods because
it's more renewable. And that's interesting too, because domestic prices for wood are always more expensive, you know. So you're picking a piece of maple or a piece of cherry or a piece of walnut, and you're paying a premium price for it.
Yeah.
But it's a domestic wood, and people don't make
it's a harder sell.
Yeah.
I know. So. I mean, the most affordable wood we have is mahogany.
Interesting.
Yeah, from a price standpoint. Yeah. I mean, that's jeepers. You know, if you think people are worried about rosewood, you know, someday you may not be able to get a rosewood guitar, mahogany is the one that's going to hurt. You lose mahogany...
Yeah, necks.
Necks. I mean, ribbon. That's the killer. That'll make you forget about rosewood in a hurry.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just underestimated. You know, people take mahogany for granted.
Mm-hmm.
That is like the lifeblood of the acoustic guitar world.
I don't even know. Are there efforts to replant all those trees underway?
There are efforts going on. Yeah, there's sustainable harvesting and replanting of those type of woods.
But I don't know if it's culturally, you know, it's sort of like, it feels like there's been a tipping point where people don't want you to ever cut down a tree ever.
Mm-hmm. They do grow back.
You can't plant them, just like corn. But there's the feeling, you know, it takes a long time, obviously.
That's why.
To be realistic about it. So a lot of it we can't control. I mean, in all honesty, we use such a tiny amount.
Sure.
Compared to the rest of the world. We're at the 0.0001%.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But the problem is, from a quality standpoint, we use the top 1% of what is cut. So if there's less cut, the quality of what is available starts to suffer the most.
Sure.
We see that really in Adirondack. Like, Adirondack's a killer.
But that's a domestic wood, in a sense. And it's hard to get because that is kind of protected. So you can only get down trees, and you know, all the old growth stuff is gone.
Yeah. You'll see us use a more reclaimed wood.
Yeah.
You're going to start to see more of that.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool, and it really works well for custom shop products and things like that, but not in a big sense, because you can never get enough of it at any one time.
Yeah.
But it's good because you get old growth stuff.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, somebody tore down an old barn, it was made out of something really cool. Let's use it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's smart.
Yeah. All right, I know it's the end of the day. Final question. Most exciting new modern that you want people to try out, each of you?
Oh, for me, that's easy.
Yeah.
Modern Deluxe.
Yeah.
Any one of them, they're just fantastic. I mean, honest, you know, I think the first time that they came off the line, a bunch of us went over and just played them, and we're very jaded when it comes to playing guitars.
That's true.
And we all had our jaws open. We're like, oh my God, these things are awesome. For the price point, too.
Yeah.
Very hard to beat.
I agree. The Modern Deluxe is pretty good. All right, I'm going to show my age here.
All right,
because I'm still a traditionalist at heart. Look, any of the authentic products, to me, they're just other level. And I know it's just because I'm an old guy at heart, I guess. I can't get away from it. You know, it's the romance part of it, and I see how much work goes into making them, and the skill level, and how much handwork is in each piece. And when you pick it up and you play it, you go, oh, there it is. I knew that was it.
Yeah.
That's the one. Doggone it. Why does this thing cost so much money?
Well, and especially so the age product in particular.
Oh, I
mean, it takes it to a new level.
Because you can fool people pretty easy with that stuff.
Yeah.
We've done that.
And tonally, too. There's something different.
It feels different. I think it's psychological. There's a psychological piece to it. That's for me. But
I don't know if it's the crack lacquer makes it different. But, you know, we have these conversations, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like Tim said, we're jaded. We're in the museum playing all these old guitars all the time. So you get a pretty good reference point.
Mm-hmm.
You sit through enough of these sound tests, you get a really good reference point.
Sure.
As soon as you pick one up, you go, oh, yeah, that one's dead on. And you get another one, you go, okay.
And they're all great. They're all great guitars.
I know.
But we're just... Yeah.
Totally.
We're in the 1% range at this point.
All right. Cool, well, thank you guys. This
thank
was fun.
You.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to us. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Cool. Did we have any insider questions?
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
We did have some. Is it still rolling?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Insider questions. What does that mean?
We have this new group. We have a new kind of.
Questions at you here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've got. Where are they? One guy said Martin has made Terz guitars over the years. Do they still offer them?
Custom shop. Yes.
Custom shop does.
Yeah. Custom shop still offers them. In fact. You know who's been asking me for a Terz guitar?
Yeah.
John Mayer.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Maybe he's on the form.
Yeah, you better call quick because when we make the
for
John Mayer version.
PRS makes one. No.
The silver Terz.
Oh, it's kind of got a ring to it. It kind of sounds cool.
That's it.
We talked about a lot of this stuff. I assume there are quite a few craftspeople that were on the line in 1990 when this guy last visited. Mm-hmm. How has, quote-unquote, labor changed quality control. How's quality control changed? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I started here in 1986, so I was neck fitting in 1990, and basically the quality level has, in my opinion, really improved, because you know you are always responsible for your own quality. That's never changed. Mm-hmm. But the consistency of parts coming to you has improved with the CNC technology.
Yeah.
So as we talked about earlier, if CF, you know, the first was still alive, he'd want to use the best to make the best.
Yeah, he'd be cutting things out with lasers just like we are. So I think, to Tim's point, the quality of the parts coming to the individuals, I think people need to adjust their scale of how longevity within a workforce when you talk about Martin, because it's, once again, it's in a different league. I mean, we've got so many people here who have been here over 30 and 40 years.
Yeah.
It's just not like any place else.
Yeah.
It's Hotel California, right?
Yeah.
They check in, but they don't check out.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. So the people here just work here forever.
Yeah.
And so they really, and they're, all right, this is insider stuff. So here we go. When I was at Gibson, we felt like from a management standpoint, you were always pushing people to improve the quality level.
Yeah.
So you're always talking to folks about doing a better job of quality.
I know where you're going with this.
When I came here to Martin, it was the opposite.
Yeah.
The folks on the floor were always telling you that what you thought was good enough to go wasn't good enough
right.
to go.
Yeah.
So you're like fighting with people on the floor. Look, I need a magnifying glass to see this spot that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and they're going, yes, but it's there.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm not running it. And they will refuse to pass it forward if they don't think it's good enough. So you had this completely, it was like opposite world.
Yeah. When we started X-Series here in 98, you know, I was part of that pilot startup, and it was the same way. You know, we had a very specific price point, and the quality level was based off of guitars in that price point competitors. And our folks had a very hard time adapting to that quality level because they were used to working on 45s and 28s and things like that. So
that's always a tough one.
John, you got any questions? Sure, you got some.
I do wonder. The one thing I think has been really significant in Martin's history is it's been a good member of the musical instrument community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure part of that has been family owned forever.
Right.
But I also think it seems to me, day in and day out, you try to do that. You mentioned not being competitive, or at least nastily competitive with other makers of the same product. Do you feel this is true, that really you work on being a good citizen in addition to being a good manufacturer?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
We do. And don't get me wrong, I don't want to make it sound like we're all very competitive people, and you do sort of sometimes get wrapped up in your own bullshit. Internally, you know, in your own ego about wanting to win, or when somebody else comes out with something really good, you're like, gosh, they beat us to it. That was better, you know. But at the same time, there's sort of this, they did a good thing. It's a good product. Mm-hmm. And overall, we try to take a real long-term view of that's good for the whole industry. If somebody comes out with a good piece,
it
then
does
we have
raise
to come
the
out
bar.
With it better.
It raises the bar.
Right.
For everybody, yeah.
So then there's this sort of, it's all rooted in this sort of level of respect for the other guy. You know how hard it is to make an acoustic guitar. I mean, an acoustic guitar is a really hard thing to make in any sense of volume. You can make one in your garage, or the guy makes one every 2 weeks or something like that, which is not easy, but it's different. It's different when you're trying to make 200 a day out of one facility at this quality level. And when you see other people doing it, you have an immediate respect for the amount of talent and work and effort and thought that goes in making that happen. And so you treat them that way.
And, you know, to that point, the Asia Guitar Symposium is in a couple weeks, and that's hosted, we are a big part of that, Martin Guitar.
Right.
And it's to inspire other luthiers to, keep the craft going and raising the bar in certain areas. So it's always fun for me because I do hang out with those guys up there and see what new ideas are on the forefront.
Yeah.
We want to be friendly. Yeah. We don't want to go to the NAMM show or any of these events and have to avoid somebody. You know, and don't get me wrong, I've said some stupid stuff, you know, that was not meant to be mean-spirited or anything like that, but it's sort of, you know, sometimes when you see it in print, it maybe wasn't the most elegant way of stating something. But it's never meant that way, so I feel like we're on more than pretty good terms with everybody.
Absolutely.
I think we're on better than pretty good terms. I think we're pretty friendly with everybody.
I was going to ask, but you kind of answered it because of the Asia thing. Like, we talk about the Martin Forum. Like, there's always these in vogue, very boutique-y builders. Do you keep an eye on what Pre-War or John Slobod or any of these guys are doing?
Absolutely.
I would say we're aware, but not preoccupied.
Right.
Okay.
I think that's probably a good way of putting it. It's sort of like we always see guitars, you know, everybody seems like everybody's making a guitar that looks like a Martin.
Oh, for sure.
Right? And, you know, people are even referring to their guitars. This is our pre-war version of this.
Sure.
Right? And I'm, you know, to be snarky about it, you know, what war was that? Was that the Gulf War? Because you weren't around pre-war.
Yeah.
Neither was your father. Or, you know. So they're clearly riffing off of our Martin's history. But that's cool. I mean, in all honesty, it doesn't bother us in any way. We say that's more of an homage to what we're doing. I think the only time it bothers me, maybe personally, is when somebody says, hey, we make a better Martin than Martin.
Yeah.
That one always feels like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, and in a weird way, that's really what sort of started the authentic piece. Chris had asked about doing, you know, keeping hide glue alive, the ability to work with hide glue. Mm-hmm. That's how it really started.
Oh, yeah.
He said, look, I'm just worried about we're going to lose that skill level. And
we actually had to go back and kind of reinvent it again because when I was on the production line back in the late 80s, we used hide glue, but for support blocks for the end of the fretboard, and that was it. So we got away from it in the 80s and started going to the aliphatic resin glues, the tight bonds and stuff, because it was a lot easier.
Right.
So, you know, when we started up with the Authentics, it was kind of like, well, does it make a big difference tonally? And I remember talking to George Gruen about it, and he's like, well, try it out. So, and go over, talk to my guy. So I did, and yeah, his repair guys swore by it. And we built a test, and sure enough, I mean, it was clear there was a big difference. Tonally with it, so then we had to reinvent, like, okay, what gram strength do you use, and, you know, how do you heat things, so, you know, because you got a small window of time to get it together before things fall apart.
Yeah,
you know, so it took some effort to get back there.
So that whole high glue thing started out, and our thought was, you know, we had people out there kind of intimating that they were making better Martins and Martins, so the whole idea was, okay, well, let's find out. You know, there's I'm okay with competing. There's nothing wrong with that, right? It's friendly competition. Yeah. So here comes $100 million worth of competition.
I mean, on the weirder stuff, and I'm thinking about, you know, like the Fender Acoustasonic or pre-war relicking their dreadnoughts.
Sure.
It must almost, on some level, it's like, yeah, there's competitors, that sucks. On the other level, it's like, okay, they've opened the floodgates now.
Yeah.
Now people are accepting it on the Martin Forum. We can we can start to,
There's plenty of room.
Yeah.
There's plenty of room. And there's always going to be the, you know, the anybody but Martin guy.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
For whatever reason. So we recognize that those folks exist. And so there's room for other people to go out and make a living and have a good time. And as long as they're putting them in guitars that look like Martins in the long run, that's a Martin win.
Yeah.
You know, it's when all the small makers start making guitars that look like Taylors, and I'm going to be worried.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
We got a couple more questions.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody wants to know if you still make the give out guitar holes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Please come for a tour. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe they'll give us some and we can mail them to you.
Yeah.
We can definitely do that. We got plenty of them.
And then there was, I don't know if this is a question or a statement, but maybe you can just talk about it. Rory Rogers, OM45.
Mm.
That was a statement.
That was like a subject
There's
line.
Actually no question.
It's not really a question or
the
anything.
Original, yeah. The original 45.
It, isn't it in the museum? We have either the original one or the replica.
We got a replica for sure. Yeah, I don't know if we have the original. Original may be at the Roy Rogers Museum. I'm
maybe.
Not sure.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to say? It's 45. It's awesome.
It's a great guitar.
Played a lot of cool 45s down in the museum right now. No argument there.
Okay.
That's, we're done.
You pretty much ended there.
Perfect.